What's up, everyone? This is the Next Tape Podcast with Mikael and
Tanika,
where we have different conversations on different topics. So what are we talking about today, Tanika? Because I know there's a few things we'll be talking about today on this episode.
Yes. So we're going to be talking about the Bald Eagles that's kind of appeared in Toronto. We are going to be talking about Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
We also have a little bit of an update tapped on to that. Okay, so, and then we're also going to talk about a woman who was pretending to be a nurse in a old age home.
Let's get to it.
All right. So, the first thing we're talking about is the Eagles. So, someone by the name of Jules McCusker came across the bald eagle nest that was near his home in Toronto, and this was back in December. He was very surprised, I think, that's pretty understandable. He said, "The first thing I thought was that it was impossible." And the reason for his astonishment, he said, was that he hadn't heard of there being a bald eagle nest in Toronto in the last century. So while spotting one of the birds of prey in the city is in of itself quite rare, it's actually not impossible. We're going to talk about kind of the last sightings that have been in Toronto. I actually thought we usually don't have bald eagles here, but I'm incorrect. We've had in the past, but the Toronto and Region Conservation Authority confirmed in an email to CBC Toronto that this is just the first, this is the first ever documented bald eagle nest in Toronto. So I don't think we've ever had a nest in Toronto before, but we have had nests in Ontario on a whole quite some time ago, but we have. So McCusker, who the one who found him, he said it was incredible seeing it. You know, mind-blowing. It's pretty cool. Experts say it's a significant moment as bald eagles were only removed from the list of at-risk species in Ontario only last year. So that only happened last year. So to see this nest now, a year later, is pretty significant.
Interesting.
I know. The number of bald eagles in North America, so that's, that includes Canada, America, Mexico too, so all of North America, hit a low point in the 1960s when only a few hundred nesting pairs remained. And this was said by Michael Tresher, who is an environmental planning and conservation expert at the University of Waterloo. So they were actually on the brink of extinction, is what he mentions. So I never knew this. I did not know the American eagle, the bald eagle, was actually close to extinction. I didn't know this.
I thought it was still around in America.
Well, like, being being on the, it's not extinct, but being, they were on the risk list because they were potentially going to be extinct if something didn't change. Yeah. So I can't remember exactly what number you need to hit to be considered at risk of extinction, but very low from my understanding. So Drescher says that the resurgence of bald eagle nesting pairs across the continent now estimate in the tens of thousands. So it's largely due to the prohibition of a certain contaminant. That's, I'm going to not even try to pronounce this, but it's DDT. So DDT is the short form of this contaminant. And this contaminant was mainly used as an insecticide, and this was banned in the 1970s. So clearly it was, this contaminant was used to get rid of insects, but ultimately it was also affecting the eagles, and I'll get to how that was happening. So Exposure to DDT caused bald eagles to lay brittle eggs that can crack under the weight of the bird. So if the egg is cracking, then that egg is now dead. The baby eagle is no more. So that's what was happening. So obviously under those circumstances, if you're having an egg crack under the pressure, which is, as we all know, birds lay eggs and they, you know, protect the egg. They sit on the eggs, what they do.
Now, is the Toronto Zoo looking to like breed some?
So I don't know if they're in the I don't know if they're necessarily like when you say breeding, like are you saying like they are, you know, I don't want to say forcibly, but kind of forcibly breeding them, or like if it's naturally happening, that's a total different thing.
Yeah, well,
because I wouldn't think the zoo is necessarily trying to purposely breed animals. I would say it's just a natural thing that happens. Because obviously, if you're going to stick animals in a caged place with each other, things are going to go down. So that's what I would think. I don't think they're necessarily trying to. But these birds are not in the zoo. They're in the wild.
They're not in the zoo, but like, are they like?
I don't know if a bald eagle would be an animal that you would see in a zoo, only because they're very significant in America. Right. So I don't know what they would do necessarily here in Canada, but I don't know if they would have bald eagles in captivated bald eagles in a zoo. Like I'm not sure. I've never been to an American zoo, so I wouldn't know. And again, even my knowledge of our zoo here in Toronto is very limited because I haven't been there in many years. So I don't know. But yes, they say that because of the egg is brittle and it's cracking, then obviously we're losing the bald eagle, because eventually their parents are going to pass away and there's no bird, you know, from them. Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening. So this was said by, also just to put him out here, this was said by someone named John Spiro, who is the lead keeper of birds and terrestrial invertebrate, whatever, at the Toronto Zoo. So that's who this person is. Spiro says the number of bald eagles in southern Ontario is still lower than in other periods of history, but their resurgence is a positive sign of the quality of water and fish that they rely on.
Right.
It's a sign that an ecosystem is healthy when we see bald eagles returning to it. It's very interesting. So back to Drescher, he adds that there is also a larger food supply for bald eagles with small mammals. I'm so sorry for the small mammals, but the small mammals and the fish, since eagles are birds of prey, that is what they're going for.
Yeah, they like to prey on the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, not all birds are obviously birds of prey, but
like I didn't know the woodpecker likes to eat other birds. That's new. Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
Their beaks are so small. Where are they eating other animals or other birds?
Yeah. Maybe small birds. Yeah, small birds. Yeah. I did not know that. I was like,
that makes me think a thing or two about Woody the Woodpecker.
Yeah, me too. I was like, oh, well, I'm not a fan of Woody Woodpecker anymore because
he wasn't trying to eat that wood. He was trying to get some small birds. I don't like it.
I saw a video and I saw a clip. I was like,
I mean, it's been a minute since I've watched Woody the Woodpecker.
Not Woody the Woodpecker.
Woodpecker. I never knew that. Yeah. But I don't know if woodpeckers would be considered birds of prey, though. I don't know if they would be considered birds of prey. Eagle is. Falcons are considered birds of prey. There's another one that was in my mind. Owls. I think certain owls will go after small animals too. Like, I guess they would be considered a bird of prey. So Banal, that's only a few. I'm sure there's more. But there's lots more that are birds of prey. So that's what they tend to go for. So in other words, if y'all have watched The Proposal with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds, do not leave your small dogs unattended, because they will try to snatch your dog. And if you know the movie, you know the scene. Anyway, the discovery comes a little over a decade after another pair of bald eagles settled in the Royal Botanical Gardens, Coots Paradise, which is near Hamilton. 2 years later, the first eaglets hatched on the Canadian shoreline of Lake Ontario in more than 50 years. So they're kind of saying Mick McCusker, he's come back, the person who found them, that their spiritual significance is enormous. And I'm going to talk about that too, because it's very interesting in terms of their spiritual significance. He adds that it's fairly important in Indigenous communities. So there were actually these eaglets that were hatched 2 years ago, where some people in the Indigenous communities actually witnessed this happen. And the reason that it is really important in Indigenous communities, which I recognize some of the things that were said here, because I'm like, okay, yes, but I just never understood the reason and the meaning behind it. So McCusker's has a friend, his name is Duke Redbird, who's an elder from the, I'm going to butcher this, I apologize, Saugeen Ojibwe Nation, I believe. Says the return of the birds to Ontario's shorelines is a good omen, as bald eagles are very sacred to Indigenous communities and represent honor, honesty, charity, and life. He says, quote, "Our community has always loved the bald eagle for its strength and its capacity to represent truth and goodwill." So he says that the eagle feather is the greatest possible honor that someone can bestow upon you. So I thought that was very interesting. He says, you know, let's hope that the little eaglets that are hatched this year from these bald eagles that we've seen can result with just a spread of joy around Toronto, because we need it. Making that happen will require the cooperation of local residents. So it is not mentioned in this article where they are, and I'm going to talk about that too. But people who live in this area, who know where they are, here's what you need to know. So bald eagles are sensitive creatures, particularly during their nesting period. This is said by Afia Jilani, who is a part of the Conservation Authority. She says bird watchers and nature enthusiasts should avoid the area, which, again, not mentioned in this article where they are, as to prevent noise and other kinds of disturbances in the area that could negatively affect the eagles during this time. It is crucial to maintain their habitat, as it is during a sensitive time, and to prioritize their welfare, especially in the early stages of the nesting process. So they're protecting them, because this is an important time to protect them. So no one's going to know where they are. There have been pictures of them, but we don't know where they are. And I think to respect them, to respect this process, let's leave them alone and let's not have people going out there trying to find them.
Right.
The other thing too that I wanted to mention, which I'm not too sure if this is in, if these are the same birds that this was being talked about, or if it's different birds, but apparently there's these two different birds. Again, I'm not sure if these are the same ones or different ones, but their name is Jackie and Shadow. These are eagles. And the bald eagle parents actually gone viral, which you can see them on streaming, summer streaming. I don't know exactly where, but I'm sure you can find it if you want to, where they kind of see them taking turns keeping the eggs warm. Bad news is that the eggs might not hatch. So that's unfortunately where we're at with these particular birds. Again, don't know the same ones, but unfortunately their eggs might not hatch, which is really sad. The group that's monitoring the eagle parents right now says that despite the parents' efforts, it's unlikely that their eggs will hatch. Conservation organization Friends of the Big Bear Valley, who I think this is in the States, has been monitoring the eagles. Jackie, who's 12, is a 12-year-old mom, laid her 3 eggs at the end of January. A month later, the group launched a 24-hour live webcam for people to observe the eagle parents. And ever since, thousands of people have tuned in to watch them and her partner, who is 10-year-old Shadow, take turns keeping their future offspring warm. But as mentioned, the eggs might not hatch, and this organization said, quote, there has been no confirmed pips in any of the eggs. So I guess there's a point in when you probably can hear them in the eggs, and I guess you can't hear them. And yeah, they said this is later than Jackie's eggs have hatched in the past, so it's probably unlikely for them to hatch at this point. So I think they've had eggs before, they have hatched when they're supposed to. These sets of eggs are not hatching,
is there a location where these like eggs are at, or are
they're with the eagles, because they have to keep them warm, right? That's how any bird does it. You have to keep your egg warm. So it is really no different than kind of like humans, in the sense of we have eggs too. They stay inside and you keep them warm inside and they grow. And then, you know, but it's just the opposite for birds, but they still keep them warm even though they're on the outside and they hatch and yay. So they do say, you know, miracles do happen, so maybe they will hatch at some point. It's just, you know, a matter of will they. But the fact that I guess we're in March now, these eggs were hatched in January, maybe at this point, even if they hadn't yet hatched, they're formed, they're alive in there, maybe not ready to come out, but they would be alive. That's in there. Good. But we don't know that for sure, but
okay,
the fact that that's not happening and they're not hearing any sign of life in the eggs, is a little bit concerning. But you know,
it's not good then.
No, birds know when to give up, I guess. But they're not there yet, I guess. I guess they're still trying to see if they will hatch, so fingers crossed that they do. Fingers crossed are the ones we have in Toronto. If they don't yet have eggs, do soon, or if they have eggs, they hatch soon, and yay for birds. I have nothing against birds. I have a bird, so not a bird of prey.
I remember I used to have birds as well. Like I had like a couple of birds, and they died, so sadly.
We got them birds, because some birds don't last very long.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Exactly. Most birds that we have, I know a lot of people don't know this type of bird, but we have conures, and they typically can live like 25 years. So.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, they can live for 25 years, roughly. So.
How long has yours lived so far?
So we've had 2 in total. Our first one only lived for about 6 or 7 years. He wasn't I don't think he was healthy when we first got him. But unfortunately with COVID and everything, that's kind of when he kind of started to go downhill. And he had a lot of different health concerns. Mm-hmm. And he died in 2020. I think like October, November of 2020. And then we did get another one because it was so weird not having him in the house. We're used to the noise of the bird, even though sometimes he can be annoying. We are used to the sound of a bird in the home. So we were very fortunate that there was a little baby that had, you know, just arrived at the pet store, and we have him now, and we've had him for 4 years.
Yeah.
We got him at about two months old. He was born in September 2020. And yeah.
Mm.
He's annoying too, but well, I've been around birds most of my life, so yeah.
That's cool. Hopefully more eagles, bald eagles, come to Toronto, because I know there's probably more in America and more in Mexico. Don't be afraid to come.
I don't know how many are in Mexico.
No, really?
Do you think there is? I don't know. Maybe. Mm. I think it depends on what the kind of climate they can live in. Because I think if it's too cold, it's not good for them. If it's too humid, it's not good for them either.
Okay.
So
fine. Okay. Don't be afraid to come to Canada, bald eagles. You're invited. Yeah. Come along. Let's go. Come.
Wow. But yes, that is it on the bald eagles. So
what's next?
Wanna move on to Beetlejuice? Huh? Don't say it three times. Let's not forget say it three times.
Sequel. Go ahead. I know a lot of people are not happy seeing a sequel of this. They're like, don't touch.
I'm gonna have a lot to say about the sequel, actually. I'm gonna have a lot to say. Because I am a huge, huge fan of Beetlejuice. I love Michael Keaton.
There's people out there saying, don't mess with a classic.
I do agree, but that's why I don't say I have a lot to say about this sequel. This sequel has been a long time coming. A long, long time coming. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised that it's here. I'm surprised it took so long, but this is a long, long time coming. So we'll talk about it. But it's Beetlejuice number 2 is coming. Mm-hmm. Michael Keaton, as we know, who plays Beetlejuice, says it's so fun. He's seen it. He's excited for it. He says, I'm going to see it again after a couple of little tweaks that they do in the editing room. But he is confident that this is going to be great. Yeah. So if you need a little bit of refresher, the original Beetlejuice film was released back in 1988.
Jeez. Wow.
Yeah, but I actually thought it was before then. So not too bad, 88. It's almost 40.
That sounds just about right.
Yeah.
In 1980.
It's about 36 years ago. And we're almost 40 years later into this. And, Michael Keaton actually said he had to rewatch the movie again to kind of get back into that character for the sequel.
Why?
Are you kidding? He's played so many different people, so many different characters. And I'm a 90s baby, of course. My first introduction to Michael Keaton was Jack Frost, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. So that's why I have this love for Michael Keaton. And I'm just like, I love him.
Yeah.
And then Beetlejuice is hard not to still love him at the end of the day. But so the actor has mentioned, everybody, stay calm while I say this, because this is pretty big. I love this, but Catherine O'Hara is going to be reprising her role as Delia Dietz. I'm so excited. I love Catherine O'Hara. If you live under a McKeldy, you know who Catherine O'Hara is.
I have to rewatch the
Catherine O'Hara. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I can help you. Catherine O'Hara is a treasure. She's Canadian. She's a treasure. And she may have played a little role where she would scream at the top of her lungs, "Kevin! Does that ring a bell?" She plays Kevin's mom in Home Alone. Is that?
Oh yeah, there you go.
I knew it would come to him, guys.
Okay, yeah.
I gotta speak Mikkel's language before it comes to him.
Yeah, because I haven't seen the movie in quite a while. Like,
Beetlejuice.
Yeah,
I watch it every year. I watch it every year around Halloween. Wow. I do.
Interesting.
Okay. I do, so it'll never leave me. I love Beetlejuice.
I know the movie's on cable as well. Like it's.
Oh, I own it. Like I literally bought it. Yeah, I bought it and I watch it on like Google Play or whatever it is and watch it there and I'm happy. Yes, I love Beetlejuice. And there's no word on if we're going to see like Gina Davis or Alec Baldwin. With everything that's happened with Alec Baldwin in the last little bit, like I don't know if we're gonna see him. I also don't know how that would work to have Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis when they're much older now and don't look like they did 40 years ago when they're supposed to be dead. You know what I mean? So I don't know how that would work. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe we don't need to have that. We'll see. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. But. So Catherine O'Hara is coming back, so it's going to be great. Beetlejuice is scheduled to open in theaters on September 6th of this year. The cast also includes Winona Ryder, as Lydia Deetz, Jenna Ortega as Astrid Deetz, Monica Bellucci.
Jenna.
Yeah, Jenna's playing her daughter, by the sounds of it. Monica Bellucci, Willem Dafoe, Justin Theroux. Oh,
Willem Dafoe's going to be in this one?
Yeah. Arthur Conti and Bern Gorman. So I also want to put out here too that I think they're going to potentially kill off this one character. The father who plays Winona Ryder's father in the movie. He's had some issues also himself since he's been on this show. I don't think he's going to be on this movie. I highly, highly doubt it. Okay. We haven't seen him in much since Stuart Little. So I don't think he's going to be on this. And again, if you don't know who that is, he also played the principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So we can't have anything nice. But
I don't remember him at all.
You don't? Have you ever seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
No, but I remember Stuart Little.
No. Okay, he... Okay. First thing is first, you need to go back and you need to find somewhere that's playing Ferris Bueller, Stay Off, and watch it. Please, for the love of God. That is a classic movie. I've seen that movie so much. I don't. Okay, you need to do that. That is important. And then as for Stuart Little, unless you remember, do you remember that uncle? He was one of their uncles. He had like, he has like reddish hair. He was a little bigger in at that point, but that's the most I can tell you. But
yeah,
like, he wasn't like a main character or anything.
Okay, I possibly can see it, but it's just been so long I haven't seen Stuart Little too. So.
See, if you were if you've seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off, this would be easy peasy lemon squeezy. But because you've been living under a rock and have not watched a classic 80s movie, I feel like we need to like do like a classic 80s movies recap.
My movie catalog is pretty huge, you know, but like,
but you've missed a classic.
I don't know if it runs in the 80s. I think it mostly runs in the 90s.
You need to take some stuff back and watch some 80s movies. You need to go back and what was that guy's name who did that, the home homes? He did like all of those type of 80s movies. He did like, what's his name? Guys, don't scream at me because I can hear you screaming. But like the guy who did Home Alone, the Home Alone movie, he's done like 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink. I don't know if he necessarily did Ferris Bueller, but he's done a lot of those like sappy type movies. I think he did Breakfast Club. Like he's huge. And he ran the 80s.
Okay.
I don't get it.
I probably will know him, but I
want to find his name now. Because it's gonna bug me. Because every time I see his name pop up on movies, I'm like, of course this is his movie. Like, so of course it is. I'm not surprising. Because he like controlled the 80s. Like, it was crazy. Anyway, you need to do that favor for me and go back and just watch those really just classic 80s movies. Oh, jeez. Anyway, again, I was born in the wrong era. I know this, but. Okay. So if you want to know the synopsis of Beetlejuice, here's what it says. After an unexpected family tragedy, that's why I think they killed the father off. Three generations of the Dietz family return to the small Vermont town of Winter River. Paranormal empath Lydia Dietz, Winona Ryder, begins to see the lectious demon Beetlejuice, who haunted her as a teenager. His plans to finally marry Lydia, good luck, my dude, are given extra urgency at this point when his dead wife comes to life and begins to stalk the afterlife, hunting for him. So, meanwhile, Lydia's teenage daughter, who is being played by Jenna Ortega, embarks on a romance with a local teen. So it's going to There's some significance there if that's being brought up. So we'll find out what that is. Was I going to have to go past this stuff? Okay. So one of the most memorable scenes in the original Beetlejuice, which if you know the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about before I even say this, focuses on a dinner party that descends into chaos as its guests all burst out into uncontrollably singing Harry Belafonte. Do we remember who he is, Mikkel? Remember? I told you who he was. Okay. So we break it into song, Deo. You know, daylight. Come in, we wanna go home.
Yeah, right. I remember that, yeah.
With star of the original movie and upcoming sequel, Beetlejuice, confirming that this song is going to be featured in the new movie. So the actor only briefly addressed the use of the song in the new film, so it's kind of unclear if this will play a significant part of the movie, or if it would be more of an Easter egg. They're not too sure what's going to happen, but it's you can't not have Beetlejuice and not sing Deo. You just can't. It's an iconic scene of the movie, so it's pretty important that they have this in there. So, I don't know if you watched the trailer, but I did watch the trailer. Did you watch the trailer?
I haven't seen the trailer.
You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Okay, you should take a look at it, and that's not like after we record, and you can, you know, maybe put your thoughts into a later episode, but Beetlejuice trailer is out there. You can find it on YouTube. And I'm still going to see this movie because I love Beetlejuice. I've always loved Beetlejuice. But the trailer isn't doing it for me.
Oh.
I think it looks really cool. Jenna Ortega's... There's one particular like clip of the trailer with Jenna Ortega where it looks really, really cool. She looks really, really like dark, and it's definitely this is taking a turn into a little more dark than they had 40 years ago.
Well, I'm watching it right now.
You're watching it right now?
Yeah.
I feel like there was more to be desired from this movie. I wasn't seeing new school Beetlejuice. I'm seeing Beetlejuice in 1988, and I kind of wanted to see more of Michael Keaton now playing Beetlejuice.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I also want to say too with this particular movie, I hope we get more Beetlejuice than we did in the first movie. Because even though, like,
so you want a third one?
No. I'm not necessarily saying I want a third one. What I'm saying is I want to see more of him in this sequel than we did in the original movie. Because it was more heavily focused on this couple dying and obviously their journey through death. And it wasn't as focused on Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice really makes an appearance towards the end of the movie.
Beetlejuice looks old.
Well, Beetlejuice is 70 something years old now, okay?
Okay.
Right. Yes, he's much older now than he did when he was then. He was in his 30s when they did this movie.
So it's set in 2024 AD, as it looks like?
We're all in AD, sir. Yes, I would imagine. But yeah, so I wish I wanted a little more in the trailer. But the other thing that I'm going to say too, because I know you mentioned that people are kind of hating on them ruining this classic.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, I want to make you well aware, they have been talking about this sequel since I was in elementary school. So we're talking 20 plus years. This has been a long time coming.
Yeah.
So, you know, that would have been only 10 years or so after the first movie. For whatever reason, it didn't happen 20 years ago or 15 years ago or whatever. It's happening now. But this has been in the works. This has been in talks for years.
Years. And I don't think any director wanted to...
I don't know if anyone wanted to touch it.
Yeah, anybody wanted to touch it at all.
I mean, this is a Tim Burton classic. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Tim Burton is still directing this one.
The trailer said Tim Burton.
So I don't know why Tim Burton didn't do this sooner, but nonetheless,
maybe he just said it was time.
Maybe you know. And honestly, everything happens for a reason. Because if it was 20 years ago, there would be no Jenna Ortega in this movie. She would have been one. You know, everything happens for, and I think her being in this movie is so beneficial to the movie. Her playing Wednesday Addams was her audition for this. That's what I truly believe in, just based on the look of her too in this movie.
Oh yeah.
So I think everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. Everything is happening the way it's supposed to. Mm-hmm. So everyone out there complaining about leave the classics alone, this has been in the works for many, many years. I actually thought it wasn't going to happen. I heard rumblings of Beetlejuice happening, like I said, when I was in elementary school, and thinking, oh my god, yes, I'm so excited for that. And then it just never happened, and I'm like, I guess it's not going to happen now. Here I am, 32 years old, being like, it's happening. So, yeah, it's finally happening, and I'm so excited. And I will be going to see it in theaters. I will definitely be going to see it.
I probably want to just rent it or something like that.
You can do that. We can come back and talk about it. But I definitely want to see it. And
I'll support it if I rent it. And you know,
I'm still supporting it.
Yeah. Would you be okay with a third one, like a third Beetlejuice?
You can't say Beetlejuice three times.
That's it.
Wise. Hip is bringing him.
Okay.
I'm going to reserve my answer until I see the movie.
Okay.
Only because I kind of need to see that movie to kind of be like, yes, it's going to have another one.
Mm-hmm.
So right now I can't answer that question.
Yeah, I hate when movies stop at like two, to be honest with you. Like, just complete the trilogy. You might as well complete the trilogy. Like, the only one
Home Alone
should
have stopped it at three.
At two.
I like the third one. I didn't hate
You didn't like the you hated the third one?
No, I didn't hate the third one. I thought it was funny.
I mean, was it the same director?
But it was, it was a different kid, so it's different people.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still funny. And still held like that whole thing of being home alone and protecting the home. Mm-hmm. It's fucking hilarious, that movie. The third movie. Mm-hmm. It's funny.
I haven't seen it.
Then you can't talk about it until you've seen it. You can't. We were young when that movie came out too. I remember seeing that in the theaters with my grandmother when I was like, I don't know, 10, 11. So I was still young enough to appreciate the third movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then it should have ended after that. And it didn't. Because everything else after that really sucks. Yeah, because it still has the funniness and the violence to it and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was, to me, I enjoy the third one holds a special place for her. Obviously, I don't watch it religiously like I do the first and second one. I'm always going to watch those two. It's those are my favorites. But the third one is funny. Second one, personally, is my favorite, though. Always going to be my favorite.
Okay.
Okay. But what I'm going to say about Beetlejuice, though, potentially having a third one.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine doing one called Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice to end it all. I can see them doing it.
You can see them doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Will it happen? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I can see that happening. And they'd have to do it soon. Because, you know, no one else can reprise that role. That is Michael Keaton's role, and that is it.
Mm.
That role ends with him.
Yeah.
So if someone decides, let's do these again with a completely different cast, and no.
What if they do like a fourth one? You know, get ridiculous with it.
No, I think that's enough. That's enough.
Milking it. Get a new.
How much more can you keep trying to get Beetlejuice married? Like, no.
Yeah.
You
get a Beetlejuice Jr., you know, in the.
Beetlejuice should not be procreating. I'm just saying.
Beetlejuice Jr. with a whole new cast in there, you know, new generation.
Talking about movies that don't end and really and truly should never end.
I mean, if Hollywood wants to milk it, there it is. There's your example. Yeah, there's your script.
Back to Scream. We're doing a quick little early recap, but a update on Scream. We talked about Scream a few weeks ago, and the kind of drama surrounding Scream right now.
Yeah.
And we did mention about Neve Campbell potentially never coming back due to the issues that went on with the sixth movie. She's coming back.
Okay.
She has officially announced that she's coming back. She mentions that she is going to be returning for the sequel. And she has been on every one except for the sixth one. I also need to mention she's from Guelph, Ontario. So she's a Canadian, like the rest of us over here. So she announced on Instagram about a few weeks ago in this article that she was coming back to do the role by sharing a photo of the script for Scream 7. So it's happening, guys. Which she captioned, "I'm so excited to announce this news. Cindy Prescott is coming back." She also added, "It's always been such a blast and an honor to get to play Sydney in the Scream movies. My appreciation for these films and for what they have meant to me has never waned. I'm very happy and proud to say I've been asked in the most respectful way. All that's good for more money to bring Cindy back to the screen, and I couldn't be more thrilled." She also confirmed, which is really interesting, that Kevin Williamson, who wrote the original Scream film, will be directing this new installment of Scream. That is hella cool, in my honest opinion. So, he mentioned on his Instagram, it's been nearly 30 years since my very first script. Scream was directed by the legendary Wes Craven. May he rest in peace. I never would have predicted what it would become, or that I would be directing the seventh installment of the franchise. I'm overcome with gratitude and excitement. I can't wait to take this journey with Nev and the entire Scream family as we bring back Sydney Prescott in the next chapter of the Scream franchise. So this will be really interesting. Is Sydney Prescott going to be more involved in the movie as she was in 1-4, or is she taking more of a back seat with it as she did in the fifth movie? Don't know. But we will see. So, yeah. As we know the reason why she was on the sixth movie, so we don't need to rehash that. But that's really exciting for, you know, Scream fan over here like I am. You know, if she wasn't, you didn't feel the hole too much without her being in the sixth movie. I mean, you felt it. You're always going to feel it because she's been a part of this franchise since 96, like for 30 years. Like, she's a part of this franchise. So you kind of still felt the hole, but they really did a good job with filling that hole with still a memorable face from one of the earlier movies that you honestly, I remember thinking, oh, she lived. Like, I didn't remember that she lived, but it was really memorable to have her there. And at least they did that, so it was something. And obviously Courtney Cox is in all of the movies, so that was really great. But I'm really happy to have her on the seventh movie set.
Yeah, I saw a picture of Courtney Cox. I was like, she looks familiar. I'm like, is she from Friends, or is she I'm talking about someone different?
Courtney Cox. Are you asking Courtney Cox was on Friends?
Yeah.
Yes, she was.
Okay, yeah, good. Oh my god, I thought
you thought you were in that one. Yeah, no, you're good.
Yeah, I thought I missed a bullet.
She looks very different for sure. It is because it's called plastic surgery. She doesn't look like the same person she did on Friends.
Understandable. She's older now, so I'm like,
But if you look at, like, I'm just gonna say this right now. If you looked at everybody else who was on Friends, including the late great Matthew Perry, they all still looked the same, and they still do look the same as they did, especially Jennifer Aniston, and even Amy Schumer as well. Courtney Cox has some. She did too much, but you know what? To each their own. If she's happy with how she looks, that is all that matters. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
So, the next topic we're going to talk about, I know it's not the final one because I think we're going to be quickly talking about the school board situation. But the final topic for me, anyways, that I'm going to more talk about, narrate in a sense. Hamilton police have arrested a Mississauga woman who they say was working in a long-term care home pretending to be a qualified nurse. The fuck is happening?
How does that work? Don't you
trust me, it works, and it happens all the time. This feels true crimey, because to me, when I hear shit like this, I'm like, was she killing them? Because that's usually where it goes.
Is that these types Toronto?
Oh god. But like, these are the kind of people who are like angels of death. This is how it starts. So this is so concerning. But anyway, police said in a Friday media release, the officers started an investigation back in May of 2023 after learning that a 29-year-old woman misrepresented herself as a qualified nurse to get a job. Mark Nesbitt, who is a spokesperson for the Ministry of Long-Term Care, said in an email, the woman worked at a Heritage Green nursing home in Hamilton, Arbor Creek Long-Term Care Center in Hamilton, and Eatonville Care Center in Toronto. So she worked at three different locations in GTA and Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
One company, Responsive Management Inc., which operates both Arbor Creek and Eatonville, while Scott Koskuchenko is listed as the administrator of Heritage Green. CBC Hamilton contacted both operators for more details, so they contacted both of them. Hamilton police declined an interview, but Constable Indy Baraj told CBC Hamilton the accused worked at the three long-term care homes between October of 2022 and May of 2023. They said, quote, "The woman forged a real nurse's legitimate documents into her own name to obtain employment." So not only did she pretend to be a nurse, she also stole someone's, like,
identity.
In a sense, she stole her paperwork that shows she is a real nurse and forged her name onto it. That's fraud. So she not only, she's committing fraud left, right, and fucking center in this story. This is I'm flabbergasted. Nesbitt, who again is the Ministry of Long-Term Care, said inspections were completed in May and June of 2023, which identified the suspect. He also said all homes were issued compliance orders and written notifications related to the issue. The orders have been complied with, though, so they've been complied with, we're good there. The woman is charged with fraud over $5,000, false pretense over $5,000, and four counts of used forged documents. Police say she has been released from custody with a future court date, so she's not a flight risk, because I don't know, stuff like this concerns me, because I want to know what her motive was. That's the part that gets to me. What was your motive for doing this?
Yeah.
It feels seems dark kind of
crazy.
To me.
Yeah, crazy and dark and gross.
Exactly. And that's my biggest concern. Because, like, why did you do this? Anyway, the service also said it is still investigating and has contacted the province and the College of Nurses of Ontario. I don't know what that's going to do when she wasn't actually a nurse. But anyways, CBC Hamilton contacted the College of Nurses of Ontario for more details. But as of late Friday afternoon, which this would have been maybe a couple weeks ago, it did not provide any details or anything. Because the thing is that I want to say here, like, I understand going to them, but they're not really responsible in any sense of this situation. She forged her information on top of someone else's legitimate licensing to be a nurse. Like, this isn't, I mean, unless these long-term care homes contacted the College of Nurses to get any sort of background or confirming this person's a nurse, then that might be on them for sure, because they should look at their database and be like, well, she's not a nurse. Like that, you know. But if that didn't happen, then it's not really their responsibility to comment on that situation.
Was there any surveillance in the hospital or in the...
But surveillance isn't going to do anything if they believe she was a real nurse. All it's going to confirm is that she was there pretending to be a nurse. At that time, they didn't know that at the time, that she was pretending to be a nurse. I mean, the thing that I'm going to take it dark. The thing that gets that makes me think is these were long-term care homes that may operate very differently. But if she had tried to pretend to be a nurse in a hospital, that these types of hospitals tend to care more about their reputations than the safety and the care of their patients. This could have gone completely under the radar. For many, many years, it's happened. And you can yell at me if you want to, but look at all of the examples of Angel of Death's people who are nurses and pretended to be a nurse, and they kill the patients that are there because they think they're doing them a service. 9 times out of 10, those people skate under the radar because the hospitals do not want to address the situation because my reputation. Many, many times. And honestly, we haven't done better. We just had a case here in Ontario before of a nurse doing that a few years back. It hasn't been very long. And the hospitals acted like all was good. Everything's fine. And she also worked in long-term care homes as well. And everyone acted, it's all fine, good. And I can't remember if she was a legitimate nurse. But even if you are a legitimate nurse and most of your patients are dying in your care, that's something that they are well aware of and ignore. Until the police come knocking on their door. So... Yeah. The ministry said the hiring of staff in long-term care homes is the responsibility of the licensee or operator of the home. The ministry recalls all homes in the province to follow appropriate procedures to hire qualified individuals to provide the best possible care for the residents. And this was said by Nesbitt. He said, anyone with concerns about the safety of residents in long-term care homes can contact the long-term care home's family support and action line at 1-866-434-0144, which operates 7 days a week. So you can, if you're ever concerned about a family member who is in a long-term care home, and please don't ignore it. Patients in long-term care homes cannot necessarily advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
I've had family who has been in long-term care homes that was their final place of living. And there's no way, like, the person I'm thinking of right now off of my head is my great-grandfather. After my great-grandma died, my great-grandfather was senile, blind, and could not take care of himself, and a lot was put on my grandma, my aunts, his daughters, to make sure he was eating and make sure he was okay, and was being cared for in the home he was in. A lot was put on them because not much is done by the staff that are there, whether it's protocol or whether it's, you know, their capacity is full or whatever. So make sure you are advocating for your family member that is in a long-term care home, because some of them are very scary, and you just got to make sure that they're going to be safe. Don't stick them there and think they'll be okay, because maybe they're not. But that's what I have on that, and maybe we can follow the story as much as we can, and
see what comes from it. Update everyone on that story, because it's dangerous. Dangerous to see someone, you know, pretend to be, or, you know, stealing someone's identity.
Yeah,
the nurse, and then put in like the seniors in danger, and disability and danger. So like
it's like I've said, I'm curious as to what her motive was. If it was just as simply as she just wanted a job, and maybe she herself couldn't get into nursing school or whatever the case may be.
So how did this person got the, like, you know, the badges, and
she could have known these people. We don't know, like, her history. We don't even know who she is. I think if we knew who she was, I could go on a, you know, a sleuthing adventure and try to figure stuff out about her, but we don't even know who she is. I'm probably protecting her identity at this point. But it's very possible that she could have attempted to go to school for nursing. Maybe she wasn't getting great grades. Maybe she was, you know, academic probation. We don't know the situation that could have happened with her. and how she would have known this person, who she got the license from and whatever. We don't know. She could have mm-hmm. known who this person was. It could have been a friend, could have been a family member. We don't know.
Mm.
But I think to be able to get that close to somebody, she must have known who they were to some degree. That's really sick.
Yeah, it is. It is. No, it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
I got one more thing that Mikel is going to take the reign on.
Yeah, I have one more thing. We just got to make this a little short here or there.
Mm-hmm.
So the school board is suing TikTok, Snapchat, and Meta. So if you guys don't know what Meta is, it's Facebook.
Instagram.
Yeah, basically Instagram. Yeah. Facebook.
That's basically covering like all of the major social media covers Threads too. So there you go. Oh. If people are using Threads or whatever.
Yeah, Threads.
What about Twitter? Yeah. Twitter's not on. I guess they don't want to take on.
No, I don't think space. Twitter. I think it's just
TikTok. We are not taking on Elon Musk. That's basically what they said.
Yeah, basically.
We'll take on Zuck. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's TikTok, Snapchat, and Meta, basically. Okay. So, four Ontario school boards are suing the makers of Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok for $4.5 billion. $4.5 billion.
That's nuts.
Yeah, alleging the way they design their apps has negatively rewired the way children think. I mean, yes, and. Would you think so? What do you think they...
Well, if you think about us, our generation, mm-hmm. that didn't have social media to the extent that it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Facebook wasn't a huge thing until the early aughts, or mid to late aughts. And the most we had was like MSN. Remember those days?
MSN. Yeah, MSN, MySpace.
Yes. And it didn't dominate things the way social media does now.
Nope.
So I do think that it does definitely have the potential to shape how children are now. And when you're talking about kids who are under a certain age, when their brains are still developing and they're still sponges, still taking things in, 100% it has the capability of shaping someone's mind. I also heard with this whole thing that they estimate most children should spend about 5 hours on social media a day.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Exactly. Think about it from our time, our generation too, when we were in school, the biggest thing that we were told about was too much TV.
Too much video games.
I need to limit how much you're on TV.
Yeah.
You know, an hour or two. Like, that's what you were told in school, right? Now, that wasn't my life. I was never told I can't watch TV. But that's what you heard. And there were children that I knew that I went to school with who were only allowed an hour or two of television a day. Are you kidding? Yeah. You could barely watch Rugrats and Pokemon in that time. That's what that was what we dealt with. So imagine now with social media where children are very gullible and naive and take things as gospel. And we were all like that. But social media, I feel, is so much more dangerous than watching Pokemon was. Like, you always heard, oh, Pokemon's cults, please. But that was like the least of parents' concerns. Imagine what life would have been like if we had social media back then. Personally, for me, when time comes and I have kids and, you know, and I'm never going to limit my, because I was never taught that. I'm never going to limit my children from watching TV or wanting to be on the computer or take stuff like that in. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's going to be very strictly monitored what they do.
Yeah.
I would not feel comfortable with my children being on social media for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Depending on their age, too.
Yeah. That's a lot for me. It is. And I understand, like, you know, our parents were born in different generations. We're now in the millennial.
The millennials are becoming parents.
Yes.
And, I mean, my mom's a Gen X, and, you know,
yeah,
it was just very different, obviously.
So, yeah, because
with those parents, yeah.
Oh yeah, it's because it's different. Like, I when I was probably, like, you know, younger, I was probably saying that, like, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, let my kids do whatever they want.
We all say that.
Yeah,
but then you get older, it's like, wait,
and you get educated. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But that's exactly bringing up the millennial aspect of millennials becoming parents, and are usually the parents of these kids that are spending all of this time. I mean, maybe you'll have some late Gen Xers in there who are still having kids this age that are younger in elementary school, but more so millennials, probably older millennials at this point. It is those people, it's our generation of people that are also spending hours upon hours on social media. So going to happen is your children are going to mirror what you're doing, because they're not going to think it's wrong, right? Because you're doing it. Nothing pisses me off more when I see children crying because they need whatever they need, whether it's attention. Some are brats. Yeah. Some of them kids are brats. Let me tell you. But they're being ignored while their parent is on the phone doing God knows the fuck what. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, your child, it should be your focus right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to shame parents and what they're, you know, your child. If your child is, I'm not the type of person that if my child is kicking up fuss and there's nothing wrong with you, I'm gonna let you sit there and let you cry. You'll stop. And that's how I watch my mom, especially with raising my brother.
Right.
But I'm also a believer of, when you're on a train with other people, you know, maybe it's come off your fucking phone and look at your fucking kid. Because sometimes at the time they're crying because they want your attention. So those children are mirroring what you're doing. Now, the other thing I want to mention here, though, is how do the teachers and the school board have the right to file an action like this against the social media big people here? I wouldn't, to me, wouldn't that fall on the parents? Because my biggest thing as a person who works in the legal industry is, what is your reason for filing this? I want to know, what is in the statement of claim that you are putting in your, which 9 times out of 10 statements of claims are very boilerplate documents for the most part. But what is in your statement of claim that is the reason for you bringing this action against them?
I think I've seen here that it says it promotes, like, cyberbullying, harassment, hate speech, and misinformation.
Okay.
And have a part in, you know,
misinformation, I understand. Yeah. All of that I understand. But my question is how does the teachers or / school board, how are they the ones that are coming after Meta, Snapchat, TikTok? How are they the ones that are allowed to come after them? Wouldn't it not be the parents to come after them to say, you're spreading this information? And then that's the other thing too. If you're going to bring a claim to this magnitude, like, I'm not saying they should do this, but if you're going to bring a claim to this magnitude against Meta, Snapchat, TikTok, wouldn't you also come after the parents that are also allowing their children to be right. on social media for 5 hours a day on average. And that's an average number. There are probably some who are less, some that are more. So isn't that kind of falling on the parent, allowing that to happen?
It should fall on the parent, 100%. I do agree with you.
And I'm going to turn, before you say more, I'm going to turn around as well. And I think this last point I'll have. I'm going to turn around a lot as well. When we, again, were in school, we were not allowed to have a cell phone even be seen in a classroom. If your cell phone was seen in a classroom, chances were your cell phone was being taken away from you. That applied in elementary school. That applied in high school. And 9 times out of 10, like, I think one time someone tried to take my cell phone from me, and my mother said, "Don't you give your cell phone to nobody. That's my cell phone that I paid for." And I remember someone trying to take my phone from me, and I said, "No, I'm not giving you my phone. You got a problem, talk to my mom." That's the whole thing. But the whole thing about it is we were not allowed to have our phones out in elementary or high school. And we're talking, for me, I graduated high school in 2009. So this was that reality. Why all of a sudden, and this is not a new thing, this happened with my brother too, and he's been, you know, in college now, he's in his last year of college now. So we're talking, this has been for the past, like, you know, 15 or so years now, where it's okay to have your cell phone in class because you can use it as a tool for school. You can have a laptop because it's a tool for school or whatever. You can have iPad, same thing, because you can use for tools to be for school, which is all fine and good. But then why aren't you, teachers, monitoring what the children are looking at during school hours? And as for cyberbullying and hate speech and all of this, these are things that were happening long before social media was a thing. Mm-hmm. Yes, it can exacerbate this problem, but this has been going on for years. Hate speech or bullying in general, cyberbullying has been a thing since we were in school too, because MSN, for example, people bully people on MSN. This has been going on for many, many years.
Yep.
So why is it now that you're saying it's a huge problem? So let's sue them.
I guess because it's more, I would say, visible now compared to what it was like years.
Yeah.
Or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. So
I'm all. Not in hindsight, in the grand scheme of things, I'm not hating on this. I think need to be addressed, but the problem is that this is a huge conglomerate of people who are on social media that are the problem. So are you going to sue each individual influencer or a person who has an account that has videos and stuff like that? Are you going to sue each and every single person? Because those are the people that are the problem. It's not necessarily a social media platform. And stuff like, especially Facebook, you get sucked if you spew any sort of hate on any type of thing that you could potentially get yourself into Facebook jail. I don't know how it is on Instagram, but they have put in tools to help those things. So I don't know what more they expect Facebook or Meta on a whole to fix that they haven't done already. They're very strict.
They are.
Now, I can't speak on Snapchat and TikTok, but, you know, TikTok is pretty serious too. TikTok is pretty serious too, because one of my favorite podcasters that I listen to, Reality Gaze, they've just gotten banned on TikTok for something, for saying some kind of hate speech that wasn't directed at anyone in particular, but it was still nonetheless hate speech, and they got banned. They've been banned for a month, and at this point they're not getting their account back. They basically have to start fresh if they want to do TikTok again. So TikTok is very, very strict. So again, can't speak on Snapchat because I don't have a lot of experience with Snapchat, but it, you know, a lot of these social media platforms are doing everything they can to deal with that hate and the bullying and whatever else. The issue is not them. The issue are the people who are putting shit out there, you can't control them, because then we're going to enter into the freedom of speech era of things that you may not like what they say, but they have the freedom to say it. So I don't know.
I agree 100%. So this is like the first of it, of its kind in terms of mm-hmm. lawsuit in Canada.
Yeah.
Also, America, hundreds of school boards in the United States, along with some states, have launched similar lawsuits against the social media company. So it's not just us, it's also our brothers over in America.
Mm-hmm.
Last fall, over 30 states accused Meta platform, once again, Facebook, of harming young people's mental health and contributing to the young mental health crisis by knowingly designing features on Instagram and Facebook that cause children to be addicted to its platforms.
That's understandable. Hmm? That's understandable in terms of them getting addicted to it, yeah.
A spokesperson for TikTok said the app has industry-leading safeguards, which is what you said. They're strict, very strict when it comes to... I noticed that, you know, TikTok is getting stricter with, like, you know, limited, like, children on the app as well. So, like...
They need to have a
feature for 13... under 13-year-olds
mm-hmm.
On how long that's supposed to be on the app.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah. I think you're right about that.
So once I said safeguards, including parental control, and an automatic 60-minute screen time limit for users under 18. Basically, just what I said. But under 13, but same thing. Our team of safety professionals continually emerging practices and insights to support teens' well-being, and we'll continue to work to keep our community safe, the spokesperson said. So I think that's basically the gist of it. There's a lot of towards the end, there's a lot of the same stuff towards the end. So what do we learn here? Just monitor your kids.
Monitor your kids on social media.
On social media, and
it's
just like
cesspool out there for mom.
Yeah. It is like 5 hours. That's a lot.
I'm an adult and I don't spend that much time on social media.
Yeah, like, I don't. Well, I have to be on social media.
I mean, like, I do, yes, for the podcast or whatever, but I mean, for my own personal use.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not even an hour a day.
Mm-hmm.
Not even. Like, it's very limited.
Like we said, just monitor your kids. That's all, mm-hmm. parents. That's monitor your kids. And don't let them become zombies in the near future, because
we are headed in that direction.
Yeah,
we're gonna look like a walking dead in no time.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, so this ends this episode of the Next Tape Podcast. And this tape podcast, it's available now on all podcast platforms. We also have a website called solo.to/nexttapepodcast. Where else are we at, Tanika?
We're on Facebook and Instagram at Next Tape Podcast, and Twitter and TikTok at Next Tape Pod. Limit your time on how much you're on.
Yeah, exactly. We have a contact email. So email us at MikhailTanika@gmail.com. That is MikhailTanika@gmail.com. So we talked about a lot of things in this episode. We talked about
you want me to run through it?
Yeah, run through it.
We talked about the Bald Eagles. We talked about Beetlejuice.
Yes.
As well as an update on the Scream 7 movie.
Yep.
We also talked about the really sick quote unquote nurse who was in the long-term care homes. And we talked about the case that Ontario school boards are bringing against these major social platforms.
Yeah. That's quite a bit in one episode. So
yeah,
hopefully y'all enjoy that. Anything you want to say, Tanika, before we completely end this episode?
I don't think so. I think that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think
when people are listening to this, I'll be healing from surgery. That is about it. That's all I gotta say.
Okay. All right. Okay, so just pray for Tanika for her surgery, everybody.
I'll be fine by the time you guys are listening to us.
Yeah. Okay.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Don't worry. You sound like you're gonna die or something. You're not gonna die.
I'm nervous. I haven't had surgery before, so I'm really nervous. Mm-hmm. I haven't been under. I'm excited. So that I can eat cheese again and eat like I normally want to. Mm-hmm. I miss drinking some sort of caffeinated drink. I can't do that. So I'm excited for that, but I am nervous for the process of being able to get that. So anyways,
okay.
I'm fine.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay. She's fine, everybody.
I'm fine.
Okay. So I'm Mikal. And
I'm Sneeka.
We are out until next week. Peace, everybody.
Bye.